And welcome back to another segment of Musicology here with DJ Wise and, of course, DJ King as my co-host.
Hello there.
How's everyone doing today? Is everyone good?
Oh, I think everyone's doing good.
I think everyone's doing fantastic. Awesome.
I think they're going to listen to some 60s music.
I think they listen to some good folk music right about now. In the background, of course, you hear Woody Guthrie. This is not a 60s song. I hope there's no hardcore Musicology fans out there getting mad right now. This is not an actual 1960 song, but this song does have a lot of precedence in what we're about to talk about. When we last left off, Joan Baez, as well as many other folk artists, were taking over the music scene in the North. So a lot of cities in the North, like San Francisco, Berkeley, New York especially, songs of protest and awareness were extremely popular in the music scene. And one artist in particular who was taking over the New York Greenwich Village scene was a young Minnesota boy named Bob Dylan, of course. One of your favorites, I know, DJ King.
Oh, yeah, Bob Dylan. Gotta love Bobby D.
Yeah. Dylan, the son of a hardware store owner, grew up amongst a lot of prejudice, being Jewish in a non-Jewish part of Minnesota. This isolation led Dylan to look up to such protest artists as Woody Guthrie, the Oklahoma farmer you are hearing right now. Right there in the background. Dylan idolized singer-songwriter Guthrie, who sang songs regarding the Dust Bowl era and Great Depression, and decided to write music himself. After dropping out of college in 1960, Bob Dylan made his way up to New York to start a music career, as well as meet his idol, Guthrie. Guthrie at the time was dying of Huntington's disease in New Jersey, and Dylan would actually oftentimes visit Guthrie in his hospital in his last days. Did you know that?
No way.
Yeah. So
he just arranged these meetings with him to...
He would go to the hospital in New Jersey, and he would visit his idol, essentially, and get more inspiration, I guess was the lesson we learned there.
Good stuff. He went to the...
Went to the source, exactly.
Yeah, went to the source right there.
So during that time, Dylan gained a lot of popularity in New York's Greenwich Village Coffee House Club, smart people's nice dress and fancy clothes wearing intellectuals. And by the time he was 20, Dylan had already signed a record deal with Columbia Records. And his first album, which was a self-titled album, did not gain any success. Or not a lot of success. As much as we know Bob Dylan, you know.
It was a fair debut. I mean, like, what can you say, right? It's just, I mean, at the time, it was, rock music was super popular.
Yeah,
so this
yeah.
was just a guy on a guitar.
Yeah, especially in New York, where, I mean, jazz was still kind of prolific. Dylan comes out with this folk album, and it's not amazing. But you know what? He comes back 1963, a year later, and releases The Freewheelin' Bob Dylan, right?
Yeah, that was the one that actually propelled him up to the top.
That was the great commercial success, the pivotal album in essentially his music career and in folk music in general.
Mm-hmm.
Songs like Blowin' in the Wind became active anthems for civil rights. And yeah, it was... How do you feel about him? I know you're a huge Bobby D fan. Is that one of your top favorite albums, or do you just like it because it was his first popular album?
Well, in terms of Bob Dylan,
right?
It is one of my favorite Dylan albums.
Oh, okay, good.
So yeah, so in the context of Dylan, yeah, one of my favorite Dylan albums because it was a Dylan, you know, you knew and love from the 60s, just him and his guitar,
right.
Singing his protest songs.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Blowin' in the Wind, Masters of War.
Right.
Do
you have a favorite song off that album?
Probably those two, Blowin' the Wind and Masters of War.
Okay, well, I'm glad you actually said that.
Yeah.
Because I want to get done playing Peter, Paul, and Mary here, who are also great folk artists at the time, sort of before Dylan, covering a Woody Guthrie song, much like Dylan did. And I want to play for everyone out there. I want to play for those Dylan penguin lovers out there.
Yeah.
Masters of War. And
sweet.
I want to let them see what they think of Dylan's protest songs here. So don't go away. Musicology here with DJ Wise and DJ King on radio.dominican.edu.
Don't go anywhere.
masters of war. Here that build the big guns. Here that build the death planes. Here that build all the bombs. Here that hide behind walls. Here that hide behind discs. I just don't want you to know I can see through your masks. You that never done nothing but build to destroy. You play with my world like it's your little toy. You put a gun in my hand and you hide from my eyes. And you turn and run farther when the fast bullets fly. Like Judas of old, you lie and deceive. A world war can be won. You want me to believe, but I see through your eyes. And I see through your brain, like I see through the water that runs down my drain. You fasten all the triggers for the others to fire. And then you sit back and watch when the death count gets higher. You hide in your mansion while the young people's blood flows out of their bodies and is buried in the mud. You've thrown the worst fear that can ever be hurled. Fear to bring children into the world, for threatening my baby, unborn and unnamed. You ain't worth the blood that runs in your veins. How much do I know but to talk out of turn? You might say that I'm young. You might say I'm unlearned. But there's one thing I know. I'm younger than you. Even Jesus would never forgive what you do. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find when your death takes its toll, all the money you made will never buy back your soul. And I hope that you die, and your death will come soon. I follow your casket by the pale afternoon, and I watch while you're lowered down to your deathbed. And I stand over your grave till I'm sure that you're dead.
Oh, the 1960s, the 1960s, 1960s. Bobby D here with Masters of War off Freewheeling Bob Dylan. His second album, commercially successful. Great protest song. Bobby D. How do you not talk about Bobby D in the 1960s? We were talking about this a minute ago. We were talking about how almost everyone back in the 60s was doing Bobby D.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, with Bob Dylan coming out, he had such a major influence on the later part of the 1960s as he grew more popular and as he kind of blossomed as a musician. We had a lot of other musicians getting popular from him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, where do we start? Okay, the Byrds.
The Byrds.
The Byrds, mid 64, 65.
They took Tambourine Man and made it go-go. That's not what Bobby D was going for.
Top the charts in 65, made them popular.
Yeah, and Peter, Paul, and Mary, even though they were before Dylan, they still took a couple of Dylan songs, Manfred and Son, The Turtles.
Oh, yeah.
All did Dylan.
Jimi Hendrix?
Jimmy did Dylan, but
all along the
but Jimmy's cool. And Like a Rolling Stone.
Oh, yeah, right.
But Jimmy, let's not get into that quite yet.
Jimmy's later.
Don't get me started on Jimmy, everyone. If you see me and I look like I'm tired or bored or I look like a loser, just bring up Jimi Hendrix and it's on. Anyway, as Dylan moved on with his career, he began to become critical of his own work, and he was actually quoted as saying, "Those records I've made, I'll stand behind them, but some of that was jumping into the scene to be heard, and a lot of it was because I didn't see that anybody else was doing that kind of thing."
Interesting.
Yeah, me, I don't want to write for anyone else anymore. From now on, I want to write from inside me. So Dylan is becoming a little bit, you know, critical of these protest songs that are sweeping up everywhere, and they're probably because of him.
Oh yeah.
And you know, Dylan goes, "Wait a minute, I don't do what's cool. I do what's in me." You know.
Yeah.
And so, what does Dylan do? He goes to Europe, and he goes and he tours, and he does Royal Albert Hall. He does the whole scene in Europe. And what does he see in Europe? What does he see a lot of? You know what I mean? Like,
he probably sees a lot of rock music.
He sees a lot of electric rock music. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
And he's from
nowhere. You
know, Nowheresville,
USA.
Minnesota, yeah. Looking at Dust Bowl era.
And like
shoebox guitars.
Yeah.
Then he sees these cool Marshall stacks, and what does he want?
He wants to get an electric guitar.
He wants an electric guitar. He wants an electric piano player. He wants it all. He wants the electric band. So what does he go and do when he comes back to America? He sets up his new band.
He's going to start a rock and roll band.
He's going to start a rock and roll band. Yeah, look at that boy. And he releases his fifth album, Bringing It All Back Home, which is what he did. And he, you know, it's kind of like bringing back rock and roll back home. And it displays a lot of Chicago blues style music. You know, we talk a lot about on Musicology Chicago blues coming in with Muddy and Howlin' Wolf and Chuck Berry and Buddy Guy. All those blues guitarists affecting Dylan here, and it shows, man. It shows in bringing it all back home, and especially Highway 61 Revisited.
That Which was the album right afterwards.
Right after, yes, his sixth album. And so he comes back, and he goes to the Newport Folk Festival, and he shows this new electrical band, goes to the Newport Folk Festival in 1965, and he shows off this new band, and what does everyone do?
Boo.
They freak out, man. They're all sitting there with their sunglasses, and they don't know what to do, man.
This is too England for me.
Pete Seeger runs up to the lead singer of the Byrds, and he goes, "What's Bob Dylan doing, man? I'm going to chop his wires down with this axe right here, man." And he freaks out, and Bobby D just goes on to continue, even though he's getting booed, even though he's playing awesome music.
Yeah.
And you know what?
Which later those people would probably love.
Exactly. And because it's Bob Dylan, everyone goes, "Oh, right, he's a genius." And then they remember who's going to innovate rock and roll. So Bob Dylan.
Which is, I loved how he carried on.
I know. He carried on and he just did his own thing, you know? That's 60s right there, man.
I've been on stage a couple times before with my brother, and we've done a couple live shows.
Right.
Luckily, every time we got an applause, cheers, and whatnot.
Yeah.
But to to think that we could have been booed
it's
the entire time and
exactly.
having people
going on stage is never easy.
Yeah, so what Dylan did
no matter
was,
what decade.
What was amazing because one, cause he got booed at, so he didn't stop. And two, he didn't care what anyone said. He then made two other amazing electronic albums.
Electronic.
Yeah, well, yeah. Electronic, quote unquote, electronic yeah. albums.
Cool
Highway
61.
Yeah, like a techno album yeah. by Dylan. Yeah. Like, this is the future.
This is dubstep, everyone. Check it out. Anyway, he's got like a backwards cap. No. Anyway.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So here's Maggie's Farm. Okay. This was one of the songs that Dylan played at the folk festival that got everyone going off. Here it is, Maggie's Farm, off of Bringing It All Back Home by Bob Dylan, 1965. Here you go.
Scrub the floor. I ain't gonna work on Maggie's farm no more. I ain't gonna work for Maggie's brother no more. About man and God and law. Everybody says she's the brains behind Pa. She's 68, but she says she's 54. I ain't gonna work for Maggie's Ma no more. Just get bored.
Oh, Bob Dylan, Maggie's Farm.
65.
Bringing it all back home.
Bringing all that rock music back home to the States. And then having it get blown up in my face. That's the actual original title.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, no.
Oh. But and having everyone hate it.
Yeah. You will hate this album by Bob Dylan. Damn New York hipsters of the 60s.
Damn hippies, hipsters. Anyway.
Damn hippies.
So, luckily, Bob D is now... I keep saying Bobby D. I'm sorry.
Makes him sound like a soul artist.
It makes him sound like, you know, some Motown jab. Just, Bobby look D. at Bobby D over there. He's crazy. No. Yeah. Bob Dylan, probably one of the most quoted, most covered artists of all times.
Still did it.
Still did it, and still went on the road. Got booed everywhere he went. But you know what? Everyone knows Bob Dylan is one of the most influential rock guitar, or one of the most influential rock musicians as well as folk musicians of the 60s, and that's why we talked about him. But you know what? I'm done talking about America. I'm done talking about American artists. It's too hot over here in Dominican, over here in America.
Yeah.
And I need to go a little bit north, and I need to go east, okay?
Definitely.
You know, and I need to go to Liverpool.
Yeah, we're going to go to Liverpool.
I think we're going to go to Liverpool right
UK,
now.
UK, in the heart of 1960s music.
In the heart of 1960s music, after Little Richard and Chuck Berry sort of blew open the doors. So it's 1963. And these four young lads from Liverpool release an album called Please Please Me.
Uh-oh.
And what happens in England? That album explodes. It's an amazing commercial success in the UK. The album stayed at the top of the British pop charts for 30 weeks. And it was only replaced by their second album with the Beatles. So,
right afterwards in 63.
Yeah. So needless to say, Beatlemania was sweeping Britain. And it needed to come to America.
It just had to
eventually.
The Beatles imagined that plane ride. They while they were on it, they were really nervous. They didn't think that America would like them.
Yeah,
but
they were actually they were extreme, which is kind of ironic to think about because of the when they got to JFK, February 7th, 1964, and the audio is just women screaming for miles. And a part of that was because Beatles manager Brian Epstein decided to publicize the hell out of the Beatles in America. So he got Columbia Records to spend over $50,000 just on publicity for the Beatles coming to America.
Wow.
Yeah. He literally had posters in every state that said the Beatles are coming.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that's a marketing right
that's
there.
A marketing scheme. Every state. And he had all the major news publications like Newsweek, Time, and the New York Times writing stories about the Beatles before they were even there. So writing reviews for a band that hasn't even showed up in America yet. And then they show up, JFK Airport, February 7th, 1964, and there's an explosion.
Girls
it's just
everywhere.
Girls everywhere.
That's why it's so annoying to hear to watch Beatle documentaries in their early days because all of it's just like... music, them talking, and girls screaming.
Right. You know, here, we've talked about Joan Baez before, and here is Joan Baez finishing up a set here. Hold on. So there's Joan Baez finishing up a set, pretty folky, and that was maybe like 62, okay? And here are the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show finishing up their set, their first American appearance on TV. Let's see what they sound like.
I think they liked us, John.
I think so, too. Okay, so hearing it on audio hurts my ears. Imagine it. Imagine being in the actual room at the time.
Imagine just being some dude like, oh, yeah, these guys are pretty good.
Yeah.
And then you go expecting to see just this nice, quiet band. And then,
just,
shut up.
Jesus.
Just everyone shut up for a minute.
They, I mean, if you see the videos on YouTube of all their concerts that they have between the years of 64 to 66, all these girls are just, like, going crazy.
Yeah, they're crying and stuff.
Yeah, they're
like,
crying and passing now and, like.
What?
Like, yeah, some of them even passed out. Like,
I know.
I saw this
is crazy.
I saw this one where this girl was just, like, completely dead, and they were trying to, like, give her water and air and, like.
Yeah, water and air, yeah. Like, just like, oh my goodness.
Fanning her face out.
Like, wake up, oh my God.
I think the Beatles killed you.
Incidentally, the Beatles accidentally murdered
400 girls in their way. But
yeah, but they gained a lot of success regardless of essentially all this craze amongst all these fathers, daughters. They were still accepted in America. A lot of major news organizations loved the Beatles. They were kind of quirky. John especially was pretty quirky, and so was George. They loved to be on camera.
They were like, at the time, I mean, I love them so much, but at the time, they're kind of like, you know, they were like that boy band.
They were just
like the cutesy boy band.
Yeah, exactly,
like, you know,
exactly.
Like, we're so cute, we make
little
songs.
But that's a cool boy band to have. If that's your decade...
Oh,
the 1960s gets the Beatles as their boy band. Who do we have now?
It's, yeah, One Direction and the Jonas Brothers.
Oh, yes.
So, like...
Modern day Beatles. Anyway.
So, you know, I mean, but...
God.
What I thought about this the other day when I was listening to...
The Jonas Brothers?
Yeah, when I was listening to the Jonas... When I was deep in thought in the middle of it, this Jonas Brothers album. No, but I was listening to an early Beatles hit, and I was just... My mind wandered, and I thought of One Direction and how they're doing.
Right.
And how it's kind of similar, but... The thing is that, you know what's the main difference between the Beatles and One Direction?
Is that the Beatles...
Actually had good songs.
Yeah, it's because they made their own music, too. It's not that they were told to make it. It's because they liked to make it.
And incidentally, they were just really handsome and cute.
They just happened to be handsome.
And good-humored.
Except for Ringo. Yeah. And, so... That's awesome about the 1960s. That's why we love the 1960s. That's why we're talking about the Beatles. Within 2 months of being in America, by April 1964, the Fab Four had already taken the first 5 spots of the U.S. Billboard chart. So they had 1 through 5 on the Billboard chart.
Yeah, so that's 64. That's when Hard Day's Night came out. So that
exactly.
That was their peak of Beatlemania,
yes.
I think.
Especially... In America.
Oh, in America, yes. Definitely. They were doing a lot of tours in America. I saw one in Washington D.C., Las Vegas, New York,
right?
Down in SF, even.
Did you?
Yeah. Huh. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah, the Beatles are influential. They changed music forever. They took that rock they heard in America and they made it pop. They made it clean. They made it fun. And it was cute. And that's why it was marketable. But they were also just great musicians.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's why we love them. Just to show you how big of an impact they had, because I want to really stress to you why we're talking about them in the 1960s, is that Billboard ranked them the number one all-time most successful Hot 100 artist of all time. They currently hold the world record for most hits to reach number one on the Hot 100 list.
Mm.
And EMI Records estimates that they have sold over 1 billion units worldwide. So that's the most selling of any artist or any band. Yeah, and they came out of the 1960s.
And it's just about half of those billion is mine, so.
Yeah.
It is my collection.
Anyway, we're talking about the Beatles right now. We haven't even played... Any Beatles songs.
Yeah.
So
let's do it. Come on.
Okay.
Get the jukebox out.
All right. Okay. Hit it, Fonzie, for me. radio.dominican.edu here.
Please,
DJ
please,
Wise here. Or just call me Wise. I like that better. DJ King here.
Hello.
We're going to play some Beatles for you. This is off their first album, Please Please Me. I saw her standing there. Don't go away. We got a lot of great more music for you on radio.dominican.edu.
Turning back, yellow. all good children go to heaven.
The Beatles, that was I Saw Her Standing There, as well as You Never Give Me Your Money off of Abbey Road, and a little bit of additional vocals there by Johnny at the end with the whistling. Yeah, so...
There's, I mean, just for quick little thing, between those two songs...
Beatles, yeah.
Between those two songs... There was a huge, you know, of course, you guys know this, a huge
right.
meat of work that started off with beat music, progressed to folk,
right.
later psychedelia, then back to basics with Abbey Road.
With Abbey Road. And the reason why Abbey Road was picked was because it's my personal favorite album, and it's probably like their second best album, I think. Maybe Revolver kicks it in at number one.
It's like making a list of the best Beatle albums is so
hard. That's such a personal thing to decide. Anyway, there's no one right answer. But You Never Give Me Your Money, one of my personal favorites. I know DJ Kingster is over here, also a big fan. But I want to talk about America still. I want to talk about how when the Beatles came to America, they kind of overshadowed different mediums of music or different genres of music. One instance in particular of that would probably be Motown. Motown was started in Detroit. It was pretty much founded by a guy named Berry Gordy. And it was pushed back not only because of the Beatles, but also because of blues and R&B. And Motown in the 1960s didn't really start to pop up until like mid-1960s. When Berry Gordy started to pick up a lot of different acts. He was a producer, he was a writer, and he was essentially the guy that paved the way. He picked up, I mean, you're going to hear this list in a second here, and you're going to be like, wow, this guy knew where he was going. He picked up guys like Smokey Robinson, Marvin Gaye, and Marvin Gaye, the Supremes. The Marvelettes, and even a 12-year-old named Stevie Wonder.
Oh, little Stevie.
Little Stevie Wonder. So you're talking about, like, this guy who just kept picking up these super, super machines of music, and what he wanted to do...
Incredible investment, by the way.
Incredible investment, yeah. He chose his time wisely. Gordy essentially assembled from these musicians... a super music machine in order to bring African-American music to white America. That's what he wanted to do. And that's what he did. He envisioned his work as a peaceful integrationist program. A quote here from him says, I saw Motown like the world Dr. Martin Luther King was fighting for with the people of different races and religions working together harmoniously for a common goal.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I'd like to think he really did that. I think he brought all types of musicians together. I think he brought essentially African American musicians to the mainstream, and he got more black artists on the pop charts, which was run extremely by a white biased media. So that's something amazing. Funny thing, actually, all the musicians had to go to finishing school, which is run by a woman named Maxine Powell. I don't know if you knew this, but they essentially just had to go to a school to get polished. So there were all these musicians from Detroit and from humble beginnings, quote unquote, and they had to go to this etiquette school where they had to, you know, don't sing with your hands, baby. lean back and don't close your eyes. Marvin Gaye used to close his eyes, apparently.
Because he's got that soul.
He's just got that soul and he feel it. But no, not for Maxine Powell. She told him, open your eyes.
Because
it looks...
Because it's sensual?
No, because it looks like he's sleeping.
Oh.
When he's, that's what she said. I guess I kind of see it.
Because it looks like you're sleeping.
And it worked. You know what? It worked. That whole touring bus machine, or the whole Motown touring bus with all these musicians, they got on TV. They got on the Ed Sullivan Show. So, I mean, that's pretty big.
Which a lot of white viewers watch.
Exactly. It was huge.
Especially after the Beatles.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So let's look at this here.
Motown had 14 number one pop singles in the 1960s, which is saying a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And 21 number one R&B singles. So I think, you know, Berry Gordy knew what he was doing, and that's why he was inducted into the Hall of Fame, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and that's why we're talking about him right now on Musicology for the 1960s. He is the man. I kind of think of it like Detroit was the Chicago of the 1960s. Because, look at all these musicians. It's like Chess Records taking up all these great, crazy, amazing musicians, and then just one after another. You got Muddy, you got Buddy, you got Howlin', you got...
Single after single, hit after hit.
John Lee Hooker. And then same thing happens. You get Berry Gordy, and he's...
Popping out all these
Motown singles.
From all these amazing bands, by the
all
way.
All these amazing groups. I want to play for you now. Shop Around by Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, baby. I know you want to hear it. I'm sorry. Okay, here, look at me. Anyway, Smokey Robinson, personal favorite artist on this list here. Do you like Smokey? You a fan of Smokey?
Yeah, he's a good guy.
He's good. Got those blue eyes.
I like them. I like all these R&B singers.
Right.
Together. I don't want to just choose one. I want to just embrace all
and
of them.
And you're more of a soul guy. You like Otis Redding. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And James Brown, Sam Cooke, all those guys.
I get it. And yeah, I do like my Motown. So let's get around here and let's shop around here. Musicology, radio.dominican.edu. Thank you for listening. Do not go away. Do not. It gets way better.
Oh, yeah.
Not to say this isn't amazing, but don't go away. radio.dominican.edu. Thank you for listening.
When I became of age, my mother called me to her side. She said, son, you're growing up now. Pretty soon you'll take a bride. And then she said, just because you become a young man now, there's still some things that you don't understand now. Before you ask some girl for a hand now, keep your freedom for as long as you can now. My mama told me, you better shop around. Sure, she's in love with you now. Make
Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, written in 1960 by Mr. Berry Gordy himself.
Oh, yes.
Start of Motown, one of the originals. Thank you, Smokey Robinson. But the moment everyone's been waiting for here on Musicology, 1960s rock, it's happening. Finally, dude.
Oh, yeah. Here we are.
We
the place,
you know,
where we need to be.
We always talk about 1960s rock, and here we are. I'm ready to get started, dude. Let's talk about rock and roll. So originally rock and roll started, or the rock and roll we love now, is a product of this blues that essentially found its way somehow to the UK and started affecting all these different artists like the Animals and John Mayall, a lot of different musicians, and not necessarily different, but they all had a common interest in blues. And so they took it and they started to play blues, and they started to play electric blues. They liked Muddy. They liked all the big Chess guys. Mm-hmm. And
taking their stuff, making it their own.
Chess actually turned from Chess to Pi International. So that's how a lot of those different blues musicians got shifted over into the UK. And Britain, you know, was kind of encaptured by Beatlemania, as we talked about at the time. But blues guitarists and blues artists all kind of stayed underground for the beginning of the 1960s, and they kind of stayed a little bit low-key, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And they all started to play kind of low-key club venues, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So one of the artists in particular, or one band in particular, excuse me, was a band who met at a train station. A guy named Keith Richards met up with an old school friend named Michael Jagger. And Mick was carrying a box of records, and Keith was like, "Hey, where'd you get those records?" Even back then, even like at 17, he was like, "Hey, where'd you get those records?" And so Mick was like, "Oh, yeah, no, I love the blues." And guess who started a band? They did. They met up with Brian Jones, who really kind of was the glue to the band. And so they started to play together. They started to gain a lot of popularity in England.
Rolling Stones. Interesting British band singing like they're from the South.
Singing like they're a black band from the South. They were actually, funny thing about the Rolling Stones is Brian Jones wrote a letter to the BBC asking them to get played on the BBC radio station. And BBC wrote back, and I'm not kidding you here, they literally wrote back, "No, your lead singer sounds too black."
What?
Yeah. So.
Ouch.
Mick? That's not an ouch. I think Mick was like, yes. Like he was like, I think he was so stoked for that.
Some racism here tonight.
Some racism against a white person, sounding like a black person. So.
Wow.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. So that was the sort of prejudice at the time. I mean, you wanted to hear Beatles mania, but.
Oh, right.
But they strove on. They strived on, and they started to make hit after hit. And then, of course, Satisfaction comes out, and...
And then they're on top of the world.
Then they're on top of the world, and they're exploding, and they're the Barbra Streisand of America, essentially. They... Screw Barbra Streisand. And so, yeah, towards the late 1960s, 1969, they released Let It Bleed through Olympic Studios in London. It topped the UK charts within a year. It had songs like Live With Me, Midnight Rambler, and You Can't Always Get What You Want, which was backed up by the London Bach Choir. So you can kind of see we were talking about progressive rock and Music Central. That's pretty progressive, bringing in a choir. I want to play for you now because I want to make sure we get all these amazing artists in here, especially all these great blues guitarists in here. I want to play for you now, Monkey Man. If my mom is listening, here's the Rolling Stones for you. Let It Bleed, 1969.
Let's do this.
Thank you.
Monkey Man off Let It Bleed, the Rolling Stones here on musicologyradio.dominican.edu. Thank you for coming back. That was Led Zeppelin's last 1960s album there. I think that was a pretty good example of rock and roll at the time. But the reason we talked about Rolling Stones was kind of to segue into two of my favorite bands, if you will. So after Rolling Stones gained a lot of popularity, they left the small club scene, of course, mm-hmm. and club promoter Giorgio Gomelsky looked to find a new band to fill the Stones. And Gomelsky sought after a different type of band with more of a guitar emphasis. And who did he find?
He found good old Jimmy.
He found close.
Eric.
He found Eric Clapton and the Yardbirds. Right there. There you go.
Here we go.
There we are. And so at the time, I mean, Eric would say he was awful, but at the time, Eric was probably the best blues guitarist coming out of England. And he joined this band called the Yardbirds, and they started to gain a lot of success. They started to get really, really popular.
Jimmy Page was in there, too.
Jimmy Page was in there later.
Later,
they weren't all together. But
Yeah.
What happened was the Yardbirds started to get really popular, and they had one really big hit called For Your Love, and that song took off, and everyone in the band loved it, except for guess who? Clapton. He hated it. He thought it was a pop song, and he thought it was just too mainstream, and he didn't like the lack of blues in it.
Uh-huh.
And he wanted something more bluesy. So he left. He went to John Mayall and the Blues Breakers, and they said, "Hey, man, just play whatever, any blues you want here, man. It's all good." And so he left and went to go John Mayall and the Blues Breakers, who filled in Eric Clapton's spot, but Jeff Beck himself, the progressive blues jazz artist, whatever you want to call him. So Jeff Beck joined the Yardbirds and really started to gain some success. But meanwhile, here's Eric Clapton over here playing with the Blues Breakers, and he kind of likes it, but they're not, the Blues Breakers aren't all too amazing. They're not up to par with
what Clapton is
cooking. And so Clapton goes in, he's like, you know what, I'm going to make my own band. I'm going to form like a mercenary group, and I'm going to make my own band with these two guys named Ginger Baker and Jack Bruce, and we're going to start an awesome psychedelic rock band here.
And then that's
and then
when
they did.
And then they did, paving the way for other psychedelic rock artists.
Exactly.
Such as The Who, such as Pink Floyd.
Right.
And even the Beatles were getting into the trend.
Oh, yeah. They were. Cream was in 1966, after Eric left. Cream was like just this. Three-piece bands were starting to come in, number one. And they were also heavy. They were heavy and bluesy, and that's what we like to hear. And it was cool. It was wah-wah-y. Mm-hmm. He used a wah-wah pedal, which wasn't really heard of at the time too much. And he was just amazing at guitar. You know, I'm done talking about this guy. I want to play for you "Born Under a Bad Sign" off of Wheels of Fire, my personal favorite album. My personal favorite song. You can really hear blues guitar, definitely hear a lot of great rhythm from Ginger Baker, and yeah, dude, it's Cream, dude. If you're not listening to Cream,
it's Cream.
You don't know where it's at, man. So get with the times, and here you go. Music Central, or Musicology. not anymore. Musicology, radio.dominican.edu.
Here we go.
I began to crawl. If it wasn't for bad luck, I wouldn't have no luck at all. Bad luck and trouble's my only friend. I've been down ever since I was 10. Born under a bad sign. Since I began to crawl, if it wasn't for bad luck, I wouldn't have no luck at all. No wine and women, it's all I crave. The big bad woman, they're gonna carry me to my grave. Born under a bad sign. Been down since I began to crawl. If it wasn't for bad luck, I wouldn't have no luck at all. Troubles been my only friend.
begin to crawl. If it wasn't for bad luck, I wouldn't have no love. If it wasn't for real bad luck, I wouldn't have no luck at all.
Creamy.
Yeah, dude. That was awesome. So you can still tell, pretty bluesy song. They have more psychedelic stuff, but you can definitely hear it, man.
Mm-hmm.
You can hear the...
It's definitely super bluesy.
It's super bluesy, and it's super good. That was Cream, Eric Clapton, Ginger Baker with Ginger Baker and Jack Bruce. Amazing band. Left the Yardbirds. Jeff Beck came in. Then Jimmy Page came into the Yardbirds. Then Jeff Beck left. And then Jimmy Page became the guitarist. And then Jimmy left.
And then Jimmy left.
And then went to Led Zeppelin.
The Yardbirds are over.
The Yardbirds just kept getting amazing guitarists. And then just each of them went out and did amazing things. So,
it's nice that it was it was a nice platform.
Yeah, it's like that guy who gets that really hot girl. And then she just dumps him. Before they even kiss, and then and then they're like, "Oh, another hot girl," and then she's like, "Oh no, I like that guy actually. I'm sorry," and then she runs away.
See ya.
I was just there for the money, and then yeah. So, sorry, Yardbirds, but you're gone. You're gone. And Led Zeppelin and Cream and Jeff Beck are still here.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, so by the late 1960s, a lot of bands were kind of cooling off a little bit. Drugs were kind of wearing on people. One band in particular was the Animals, and the Animals did a lot of drugs, and Eric Burden was kind of like, you know what, after this contract ends, let's just call it quits, okay, let's go back to the UK and call it quits. So Chris Chandler, kind of end of his career, was like, I'm gonna become a manager, and I'm gonna go and I'm gonna find some new talent in New York before I go out. And so he goes and hears this band playing Hey Joe. And he's like, oh, I really like that song. Huh. And then he was like, I'm going to go back to New York and I'm going to go record that with the band in New York. And then pretty much like in his last like week in New York, goes to Greenwich Village where Bobby D was playing, previously. And who does he see playing Hey Joe? Who does he see playing the song he wants to hear played and playing it? Good. Damn good.
Oh, yeah. We got Jimmy right here.
We got Jimi Hendrix. So Chris Chandler goes, oh, I want that guy.
Yeah, I want that guy.
That one, yeah. And then so essentially, yeah, it becomes to where Jimmy is like, oh, you're going to take me to the UK? And Chris Chandler's like, yeah. And he's like, literally all he asked for from Chris Chandler was like, number one, to meet Eric Clapton and Jeff Beck. And number two... was to get a Marshall stack. And then Chandler was like, yeah, fine. Okay, yeah, sure. Like, whatever. Like, of course. Yeah, you can have whatever you want. Like, and Jimmy's like, oh, cool, man. Yeah, nice. Out of sight.
Yeah.
And then so...
I dig it.
So goes to UK, gets paired up with Noel Redding and Mitch Mitchell. As a Jimmy fan, not too big of a fan of Noel Redding. I found out, actually, the other day, he was not even a bassist. He was a guitar player who they just asked to play bass.
Wow.
Yeah, so he was like, they were like, oh, yeah, no, you can come in, just play bass. And he's like, I've never played bass. And then they're like, no, it's cool. And then so then they got Mitch Mitchell, who is comparable to Ginger Baker, if you want to compare people. Amazing drummer.
And Bonham.
And John Bonham.
Mitch Mitchell, I think, doesn't get as much recognition as
he's
needs
cool,
to.
He's a cool drummer, you know what I mean? He's got some cool
guy.
Fills and stuff. So Jimmy goes to England and gains a lot of success and then comes back to America after essentially bringing Clapton down a few pegs. Hmm. There's a story of Jimmy meeting Clapton, and Jimmy just blows Clapton out the water. Huh. And you see Clapton just drop his guitar and walk out of the stage. So that's awesome. Jimmy comes back to America and he plays his first American performance at the Monterey Pop Festival in 67.
Of course.
The famous guitar sacrifice, burns his guitar, throws it on stage. All that cool stuff, but you know what? That's not what made Jimmy. What made Jimmy was that he was the kind of guy who walked around with his guitar 9 hours a day and just played it wherever he went. He didn't know anything else. He was just a paratrooper. He didn't know too much about algebra or any education or much. He just knew guitar, and he loved guitar. And anyone who says he just relied on gimmicks, Pete Townsend, is wrong, and he is one of the best. And I want to play for you a little instrumental track Jimmy did whilst recording Axis Bold as Love, his second album. And this is an outtake. Jimmy, he hated his music a lot of the time, and he always wanted to do he wanted to do retakes. This is an outtake. This is a song I'm playing for you that he wouldn't even play for you. So that's how amazing his music is. He's a perfectionist. Here it is. It's a Bold as Love instrumental only here on Musicology, radio.dominican.edu. Thank you for listening. Do not go away. We'll be right back. True innovation here from Jimi Hendrix.
Who didn't like it, apparently. Which is just crazy.
You know what? It's time to go here on Musicology. I know I don't want to go. And we got a lot of great music to talk about ahead in the 1970s. So I guess we should end it.
60s for you. What can we leave you guys with at the 60s? That it was a way for rock music to stay relevant in the world. It was psychedelic music. It was folk music. It was pop music. It was R&B music. It was country.
Right.
It was
right.
Southern rock. It was acid rock. It was all this stuff.
Right. Anyway,
it's just scratching the surface.
Yeah. So, man, I'm still I'm still off that song right now, man. That thing got me going.
Good old Jimmy.
Anyway, that's my guy, Jimmy. My true favorite artist in just any music. I'm glad I got to play that for you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for checking out Bobby D, the Beatles, the Miracles with Smokey Robinson, the Rolling Stones, Cream, all those great artists. Check them out yourself, please, on Google, whatever you want. They truly are amazing. Check out the 1960s in general. I want to leave you here with a song, another song by Jimmy. Probably not surprised. And I hope to see you next week. Don't be late. Here's Voodoo Child off Electric Ladyland. Musicology, radio.dominican.edu.
See you next week. Wow.